a choice right now, between fear and love. It's just a rock.
Out of the dark night of ignorance and into the shining light of truth.
Expounding reality.
A population of citizens capable of critical thinking.
We don't see things as they are, we see them as we are.
There's a level of reality where everything dissolves into an ocean of energy.
We empower our experience by insisting on our authenticity.
That's very profound.
Very.
Expanding reality.
R777, welcome back to the show. Do you know, sir, that you are episode 333? It just happened to work out like this with the schedule. So R777, episode 333.
There it is. The number that proves to us we can't divide a whole into three parts evenly.
I love it. Okay. So is that maybe along the lines of what you're seeing here? Just some things not adding up, some differentials and observations around the realm here?
Oh, I think it actually just shows us the nature of where we are. I don't think it's insidious, but if you take a pie and someone said, please cut this into three even parts, I think you'd think, well, that's easy. But mathematically, it can't be done. There's always a remainder.
Interesting. It's like one of those triangles. I've seen these people take two identical triangles cut out of graph paper so you could see the squares were exactly even. And the way it was cut, if you rearrange the triangle, there's a piece left over. And in another way, there's a piece missing. But it's the exact same amount of pieces. It's interesting the way that this place will give you some certainty, but then also remove some certainty at the same time. It's a pretty balanced equation.
It's interesting if you really think about it, because I suppose you could get three equal pieces if the remainder on each was equal from a mathematical perspective, right? But that at the same time ties you to the infinity idea that shows we can, I don't know, is an illusion that we can in fact get three equal pieces, but mathematically we recognize that they're not. There's that remainder that keeps going.
And what's the remainder for? It's almost like human design, how in that element there's power centers that you sort of draw an energy from. And I myself do not consume as much food energy as I exude out. So I definitely have a differential in my equation as well. And is there some sort of leftover in the equation that then gets allocated, perhaps? Maybe the alchemical process itself.
I think it tends to show you the importance of the idea of three, which has made it into so many spiritual traditions, because if I take a thing and cut it in half, I can have two equal halves. But I go one number higher to three, and it starts to illustrate the magic. And when you begin to dissect that, you get that, well, I want to design a thing, so I make a dot on a piece of paper. Can't really design much, so I make another dot. Can't really design much. I have a line at that point, but that third dot is magical. Now I have a triangle. Now I can design. I have a man. I have a woman. Put them together, I can have offspring, a child, and the magic of three is then pulled into the realm of life. So the idea that that remainder is there, it's not insidious, but how is it that we can have a half that is equal, but we can't have a third per se? It shows the expansive nature, I guess, of three.
And in the alchemical nature of three, because this place is touted to be duality. And I don't disagree with that. But through the duality, you get a third thing, which is you, the observer. And you, the observer, also have an effect here, which is the result or product of that distillation process of two completely different things. Sometimes this or that, Democrat or Republican, right? Sometimes you find a third door and say none of that shit.
This is where the illusion fools so many, because in actuality, the observer is the creator on some level. And this is how we get fooled into remaining an observer, detached from the idea that we're affecting anything at all. When, you know, the truth of it is that our mind precedes all. Nothing happens before it's ever in an idea. The old principle that's been associated with so many old traditions, you know, like the books people tout, is that mind precedes all. But if you go at that idea, it's not really deniable, at least for me.
No, not at all. And I tend to see it these days as a director actor situation, to where this man in a maze idea, to where, you know, the indigenous had this idea and the symbol of a man standing at a maze, but at the higher level, it's you that created the maze, but the you in the maze is the one acting what the director you offers. And director you is listening a month ago to what you were thinking about and paying attention to. And it's sort of scripting this out in front of you in a beautiful little dance. And I feel the surrender is a beautiful part of this as well, because you will find so much more in that in the quiet times, rather than the being batted around and reactionary to whatever's going on, air quotes, out there. That's how you get into the great work that you're doing, is remaining focused and undistracted. You can't do what you're doing by listening to the noise and getting upset about shit out there.
Well, at some point, you kind of come to the realization that as the observer, if you are influenced in some way, it changes the observation. So if you allow the observation to become a negative observing, then, I mean, that kind of lowers your resonance. If every thought you had for your entire life was a positive thought, what effect would that have on the path?
Sunshine all the time makes the desert.
Until it rains.
Exactly. And it's that. It's this sine wave, this dichotomy. And I'm getting more comfortable with surfing, is how I feel about it. You know, we're just surfing this sine wave of awesomeness. How are you doing with this, with everything these days? Because it's wild. It's crazy. It's testing our faith in interesting ways. And I feel we're all rising to the challenge. How are you doing?
I accept that the new era that is coming, whenever it comes, will be a higher resonance. And that in knowing that, it means that all the low vibrational systems and ways that we have become so used to have to go away now. And human beings tend to have a very difficult time with change, but we're going to have change at levels that are maybe unimaginable. It is my perception that the new era might be best described as service to others, where the system that we've been living in tends to be a lot more about service to self.
What are you seeing in the changes with this?
I focused on the sun with my telescope, and I plan to do so because I think that it is in direct correlation what I am seeing and what I suspect will happen with the other body, the so-called second sun. I mean, if I'm correct, and that other body is a binary to our sun, what would that do if I'm also correct that it will become undeniable at some point, that it'll just be visible and it is what it is? And the end of the movie 2010, the sequel to 2001 that worked so mightily to convince us the moon landing and the moon are what they tell us they are. But in 2010, the very end has a speech by the star. Roy Scheider plays that part, I believe, that says, "My children will grow up in a world with two suns." What does that do to nighttime? What does that do to weather? What does it do to the theory of gravity? What does it do to winter? And these are big ifs, because I started that by saying, if I am correct. And that's what I'm waiting to see. But think about what illuminates our world, how much the sun does for it. Now, double that, at least at some level, maybe not as dominantly, I don't know, but that's a big deal. And that makes for a very different reality down here.
It does. And it makes me think of stories and legends of how the moon was added, right? How the moon and then now looking back, how people have touted it and looked at it, astrologers look at it as the emotional portal. It does the cycles, the tides, the water, the emotive elements of this realm, but it was not always here, allegedly. And when we look at things like past history with these structures laying all over the place with these huge changes, one could ask the question, was that an era where it was only sun, no moon, where emotions were ravaged by this heavenly body that came in and just wreaked havoc, for a better term? We know perhaps causes great change, which then animates the next phase of this, which perhaps involves a second sun now being introduced. It makes me just ask the question, is if we start with one sun, evolve for a little bit, something happens, the moon comes in, wipes the slate clean, offers a new experience to the realm. Then after that, for a while, we're kind of suspecting maybe that there's something big coming back again. And then now this introduction of a second son, or these things are the catalyst for the next. One begets the other kind of thing. It's just interesting to think that heavenly bodies have been introduced in our past mythologies, and to think that this is perhaps one marking a great change.
There's been a lot of effort spent in the modern era to convince us all that the moon is dirt and rocks, and that human beings can mine it for things we want, and that there's water there, and that men stepped on it, which we know to be a falsehood. Why was so much effort spent in this direction? From my point of view, you can't stand on the moon. I suspect it's probably plasma or something like that. If you go to the ancient accounts, I mean, the really old ones, you're going to find endless sayings that are something to this effect. Don't point at the moon. Don't point up and show me the moon. Show me a glint, a reflection off a lake. Show me a glint of light on a piece of glass. I've seen it written so many ways. The movie trailer DreamWorks starts with that D, the little boy fishing for souls. You think you're looking at the moon, and he throws his bobber down fishing for souls, and it hits the surface of a lake, and you realize I wasn't looking at the moon. I was looking at the reflection. That reflection idea is well established in the older spiritual traditions and the older accounts that we can get at. And for my part, I think the moon is far better described as a reflection than it is as rocks and dirt and some place we can go and mine. And if anything I have just said is even narrowly closer to reality, then what has happened here? Why was so much effort spent to bend perception in that way? And I think we're getting down to it. You know, that's why the sun is important. It's why the moon is important. How important? Well, at one point, we didn't say month, we said moonth. And why did we say that? Because that luminary, which I think is a proper way to refer to it, it was the only accurate division of that period of time we call a month now. And in that, we would have had, 13 months with fixed number of days. And all that has been obscured. And now we follow a civil calendar, which is meant for business and control. And we've thrown all that aside. Well, this is the era where we get back. This is the era when we begin to recognize that civil calendars don't do it for us. Monetary push, service to self, all these things are not paced or vibrationally correct with where we're going.
Yes. And you know, the viewing pools, it's interesting you say this, because this was an ancient, allegedly astronomical way to view the sky, is that they didn't sit there and crick their neck up. That's why they said they didn't do it, was so that they didn't hurt their neck, was that they would have, like the Mayans and such, their great observations would look down at pools to look at the heavenly bodies rather than gaze at them directly. And that's interesting. It's almost like they didn't want to get the voodoo, or it's almost like they knew that what was coming from out there was not going to be correct, and that they needed to invert it to get the correct information, that they needed to look at it backwards, because what was coming to them, and even based on the sigil of Lucifer, I'm sure you've seen that, the way that it is shaped is the way that your eyes perceive light. And then of course, right goes to left, left goes to right, and then it's inverted and backwards. So it's got to be corrected by your mind in several ways. Plus, you have to think
But wait a minute, that's what your eye does. So maybe Right. They're undoing the inversion that your eye does when you look up. But if you go to places, I think it's China, there are constellation books where they've drawn out the constellation. But here's the rub. One view is facing it as you look up. The other view is if you were behind the constellation looking down. Why would they have done that? Is that the illusion, what your eye is doing? Everybody knows, like with certain camera obscura, things are flipped in exactly the way you say. Well, that is what our eye is doing, and our brain corrects it, we are told, so that we see things upright in the way we see. Well, if all that's true, then what we're actually perceiving is an illusion. And if we did flip it with a mirror, you know, water, is that an effort to undo the perspective that we naturally, I don't know. I can't tell you the answer to it, but I can certainly tell you you're correct. I think at Machu Picchu, they found such bowls where they observed the sky in this way.
Totally. And this is just a question you and I are both asking based on the conversation. This is three, by the way. You and I are three in the shit out of this thing right now. You and I came together, your crew, Brandon, whatever. And we come together to create a third thing that is this conversation, right? This expansion of consciousness. And so we're asking questions like this, but this makes the most sense to me now because this is the second time, by the way, these viewing pools have come up in my reality and they shouldn't, you know, in odd context. So there's got to be a connection here somehow. And it's beautiful that you and I are able to talk about this. Let me pull a couple up here. Let's see if we've got any images of these things.
You're looking up the constellation maps that show the behind view.
Let's do that. Actually, I was going to look up a couple of these viewing pools just so that we can get some context for the geographic, what we're talking about. And then, yeah, man, let's pull up some shit.
You know, that would take you, those viewing pools take you down the Schauberger, right? You know, what did they do with that? Was that charged water? What were they doing? Was that living water?
Yeah, that's a great point. And a lot of, it looks like some of these were cenotes as well, which these are fascinating, just pop marks across the jungle here of just these wells that you're just walking along all of a sudden, huge well, cenote. And they do have built into temples these viewing pools where this is where they would view the astrology. Now, what was the thing you were talking about the astrology map?
It's a constellation map that shows the view you're used to where you would draw an animal with the stars looking up. But there was another pair image with it that showed what it would look like if you were standing behind the constellation looking down.
Do you remember region?
Maybe China?
Is it something like this?
Yeah, that's what the map would look like, but it had two views, one looking up and one as if you were standing behind it.
Audio only audience, if you want to join us, we are Googling shit over here and pulling stuff up. if you see the one, just holler, but these are just cool. I mean, it's just to create something like this. I mean, it's just so interesting to sit there and look at something for that long. I mean, you can empathize with this, but you've done it with the one brightest heavenly body. Could you imagine doing this with stars? Have you ever thought of that?
It's crazy.
It's crazy. Even more so to look at them in water.
Yeah, I don't really use search engines much, so I'm not getting much. Most of my systems are pretty tightly locked down, but I'm sure anyone who took the time to look them up can get there. Information is so controlled on these platforms now. It's
yeah.
I wonder, our archive may have something. Let me look.
It's looking like these are the ones that are pulling up. It's a Kiva. That's not that at all. Thicker pool line temples. I'm gonna have to dig deeper into this. Well, aligned with the stars. So I'm sure that they would be using things like this. And they definitely, though, this is one of the narratives, is that they would stare into pools like this rather than crick their neck up. They would rather look into something that reflects. But I think
the big deal is what you said, that it's been reversed.
Yeah. Like you, I think that there's more to it than what they're telling us. But I think they're also telling us right there by saying that. It's always two things, right? It's a little bit of truth, and then this, we're going to add a little bit to the end of it. And if you can pick out the right shit, then you're doing great. And would it be something like this, to where if you were looking at it this way, is this a map?
No, it would literally be like the, you know, whatever figure has been assigned to the constellation, what it would look up. So like if you were looking up, say, at a bull in a constellation that was supposed to be a bull and the head was on the left, then there's another image as if you were standing behind that image looking down from the heavens down towards Earth, and the head would be, you know, on the other side.
See, that's what I'm talking about. This is this idea that you look out into the heavens with a telescope and maybe it's you looking at the back of your head kind of thing. It's this trippy all in an as above, so below shit. That's just cool. I would get that tattooed on my butt. What do you think? Have you been to China?
Be careful. That makes you a butthead, right? If you tattoo that to your butt.
Oh, I name my guitar butt and I tattoo it stuff. I wouldn't put that on my physical temple. Jeez, no. Constellation. Like, this is just so cool. The myths that go along with this. And then, of course, like you said, you know, the maps and the moon and things like this. I think that there's such a cool riddle here. And that's another question. Is anybody looking at the moon in, I mean, I know you said in reflection, but what has been gleaned from that? People who have been looking at it in mirrors and water, what have we noticed about the moon?
Well, they tell you so much, like the, what is it, Dreamscape or Dream, what's the name of the movie?
DreamWorks, dude. When you said it, DreamWorks. I knew exactly what you were talking about.
They're telling you right there, right?
Yep. I wonder, though, if you got a side-by-side moon inverted image.
I've been very interested. Some people have been working on showing that the moon is reflecting the land masses down here. And I am all about that idea. I think that is absolutely the right way to think about it as a reflection. Whether or not what they're doing is right, I think that idea is in complete sync with what was put forward about the moon in the older times before we'd been Rockefellered so hard.
Fucking A. Yeah, this is it right here. Dude.
Brilliant. Brilliant.
Let's go explore
way.
Some of this, Crow.
I've looked at it and I just admire the tack, the way they're going in at that fits perfectly. And I think what will be realized will be valuable on some level.
You know, what's interesting is if you look at this, this looks also like what the sun covers, what's illuminated, on the realm at any part of the time. It's 33.3% of the sky is illuminated. 66.6% is in darkness, right? As the sun travels throughout the realm. And so if you look at this, you're getting that same percentage here. You're getting this 216 degree visible arc, and then you're getting the rest in shadow or darkness, which is literally our scenario. We've got an illuminated body shown as this, 33.3% of it, but 66 points, it perhaps is unilluminated.
I think the Prague clock is showing where this idea is going, because the inner part of the Prague clock, where the hand, the hour and the hands are of the clock, is the realm we're aware of. But what's outside that circle is what's been hidden.
Yeah, same thing. Good call, Crow. Look at that. It's the same 66.6%, 33.3%. Dude.
So the truth of it is, you really have, and this is verifiable, you have no idea what the shape of the continent you're standing on is, or how many continents there are. But the first statement I made is verifiable. Go online and grab the map that was in every high school. What's it called? The projection is called, I've forgotten, but there are many projections. And so grab four or five map projections of the world, like the one Mercator. I think it was Mercator map was in all the high schools. But then go look at the Peters, the Gall Peters, and all the other projections. And what you'll recognize is none of them match. So if none of them match, the only logical conclusion is that none of them are correct. But what we tend to know is true about the Mercator projection is the land masses are all cattywampus. They've made the smaller countries look bigger and the bigger countries look smaller. And Iceland or Greenland is the size of, you know, a planet.
Yes, yes, this is exactly right. And they say ridiculous. That they did this. They say they did this for, what was it, subjugation purposes, right? To make Africa smaller.
Well, they couldn't. Their claim is they couldn't take a globe, which we live on, and portray it flat. But you see, that argument is moot. The minute you go to space and take a picture of a continent, that's just what shape you make it. When you get down into the map, then you can correct for any aberration of distance. But that's not what we see. What we see is a complete, it's malfeasance. It is a complete false reality that has hung in every school.
This is just a cool picture I found. You're absolutely correct. And this was done, they say, perhaps deliberately, and you're right, but Greenland should not be the same size as Africa. This is silly. And look at freaking Antarctica right here. It's when done you, by, go ahead.
When you look up the actual square mile, you know, things have been measured. Go look up how many miles across a thing is. And it's not just a little off. It is way up. And you were starting to say one of the truths where the little, you know, the patricians in Europe there in their tiny countries, these portrayals make those countries seem much larger than they are while shrinking the so-called third, what they called the third world countries down. But, you know, look at that ice sheet up there. That is many. Yeah. Or look at Antarctica. It's infinite.
This is crazy. Perry Reese would have gone nuts trying to draw this without ice, right? In the 1500s. But dude, this thing, and you're absolutely right. It's because these folks, they're going to figure out how big this continent is, perhaps. And they go, hang on, how many people are here? And then they look at this little part of the map, this little island right here, and they say, hang on, we're all controlled by this fucking piece of shit. And maybe a little tiny dot with an obelisk here. What the hell's going on? There's a lot more of us, huh?
Exactly.
I think that it's that. It's perception management like anything else here.
Right. And because from this foundation, which we've all had pounded into our brains, is the idea of population, is the idea of travel, is the idea of where, like, remember the Truman Show? I want to go discover. Well, Truman, you can't discover everything. Everything's already been discovered. And, you know, Fiji is used brilliantly in that documentary.
Yes, people are presenting the world in which they people believe in the world in which they're presented.
There you go. The key statement from Christ or Christoph.
It's such a great film. Such a great film. Because this is the question then is, because our Zodiac, I'm obsessed with this now, girl. I have been, but you gave me new eyes. Our Zodiac only covers this part of the realm. So yes, this is observational. Do you think then that this additional area here could be clue to your work about the second sun, and that perhaps it orbits this?
What I'm doing now is using for reference the oldest accounts, and I suspect that India is the oldest country. I'm not sure that the mainstream will drive with me, but that's what I suspect is true. And in the Indian works, there is the idea that there is a binary, and placed within the Yuga cycles, which supposedly we are coming out of the lowest, Kali Yuga, the dark cycle, the Iron Age, where consciousness and barbarity reign, that binary, when it gets further away from us, we go into dark ages. And when it gets closer to us, we start heading towards golden ages, where everything is increased to include consciousness. The sun, based on the observations I have done now, there is no doubt, no room for doubt in my mind that it is conscious and life-giving. And if you add a component to that, it changes everything we've ever been told.
Yeah. When it, making it a binary too gives it sort of this idea that it's been a wandering star on its own through the dark. And if you think about this as a traveler in your own, you can anthropomorphize this because this is our story too, is that as you travel, you're going to hit a midway point where you go it alone, and it's going to be pretty dark in a way. And you're going to, even if you're surrounded by people, you will feel very isolated in this place. Even though you know that there's more out there, you feel very isolated, but that's a trip you've got to take to go through this darkness to alchemize that. And maybe this is just a collective version of that. And then as we come out of that thing, of course, our partner reunites, amplifying our energy and illuminating the rest of the realm. It's this interesting sort of hero's journey. But again, the sun's and the realm itself is on a hero's journey as well.
Well, the most valuable thing in the world is, besides time, is land. And you can't really make too much more of it. So how much land is there that we don't know about? And if there is more land, doesn't that imply life occupying that land? And if the Prague clock is demonstrating that there's more land beyond what we're aware of, where does that end? We can only guess at these things.
Because if you look at this, this has orbits to it. So are these other heavenly bodies? Are these other Saturns, Uranuses, Jupiters, things like this? And is this the turtles all the way down thing? Because when I'm looking at this, man, if you look here, the constellations gather on this side and pinch, if you will, with my Texas accent, they pinch up right here. They bunch. But this looks like if you picture like an oval here and then another larger oval here, it sort of feels like a dome within a dome, you know, that we're looking up at. But you're sort of seeing this refracted, if you will, kind of augmentation to it. And then again, it's, you've got a larger expanse with hints of heavenly bodies and forays out here. And then again, a star back here on the outer side of the firmament. So you've got this depiction of additional toroidal fields up here. And this is, again, just what I'm seeing here is perhaps this is a glimpse into the extra realm. And maybe, again, this isolation period is literally a bubble that we get captured on, and we get isolated to a smaller part of this larger whole to sort of get our shit together. Maybe this is self-isolation. This is our shadow period. And then we can come back out and play with the rest of the realm when we've done the work.
Is that star maybe Polaris? Is that the pole star?
Yeah. And if so, why?
Odd that it would be south, and the way we've been, you know, maps used to be oriented differently than what we call north now. And I think that's part of the obfuscation. But when you look at the division of the zodiac in the inner ring there, the world we're aware of, it clearly shows you that the sun does not travel at a constant speed with regard to the space it is covering.
Right. Right. And this is true with our seasons as well. We know this because it kind of speeds up in Capricorn and it slows down in Cancer. And it's on like this spiral upward and then spiral downward, right? Moving it one upward degree, up and over degree per day, per 24-hour period, rather. And if you look at the star too, yes, it is a star, but look at it. It's the Merkaba. It's the Jewish star.
I've not studied this as I probably should. There's so much here. Part of the problem is there were more of these clocks around the world. They've all been destroyed, burned, or refurbished.
Right.
So, you know, information drawings or something, how they existed back in time would be a very, very big deal, particularly because then you could compare what was removed.
Yes, exactly. Because that's what we're mainly discovering, right? What's not true here. And let's go see this thing, Crow. You want to go do that? A little field trip, me and you?
I wish I had the freedom to do so. But right now
I'm planting a seed.
So darn busy.
I'm planting a seed. Let's leave it there. And I think that's awesome. Now, another thing I wanted to show you, and I know you've seen this and we've talked about it, but have you seen, so this is another depiction of what you're talking about here, this additional land. This is one of the biggest psyops here, I feel. And this is one of the biggest things that when the Flat Earth conversation expanded for me and it got out to the additional lands, it made so much sense from a controller lizard turd, sort of what we've experienced and grown up and been programmed to believe is authority. It seems like their MO, right? To hide a bunch of fucking shit and then limit resources in an isolated area. And who knows, maybe this ice ring is temporary. You know, maybe this ice ring only pops up every now and then. And when it does.
Yeah, there are maps that show no ice. You know, there are plenty of old maps. Yeah.
Yep.
I once saw an old Buddhist teaching. I wish I would have saved it. I was studying Tibetan Buddhism to comprehend their take on things. And I saw an old, old Buddhist teaching that claimed there were 33 continents or land masses.
See, and that makes more sense, right? From a realm perspective, that instead of the little turd that we've got, and again, it's about a 30, it's about 33% of a total land mass there then at 12%.
What's the name of the big UN map? You know, there's 33 divisions on that as well. They've chose to divide their map with 33 sections.
It's all right there, isn't it? This place feels more like an escape room to me lately, Crow. Have you ever done an escape room, or do you know what I'm talking about?
I'm well aware. I've never done one, but I know exactly what you're talking about.
God, I recommend it. I highly recommend, just simply because, like, okay, so I know everybody's heard me say this. We went with four folks, my mom, my dad, myself, and my wife. And this is before Mary and I were married. And we go into this room and we each brought different perspectives, which aided into the solving of this room. Now, spoiler alert, we beat it with 2 seconds left on the clock. It was awesome. We didn't need anybody to run in and help us either. But there were moments of, oh my God, we're not going to make it. And it feels like that whole experience was a mini what life is like, because you're given all these clues set up in an elaborate way by the people that know what's going on, and they'll drop them in weird ways, but they all know that you can do this and it's for you. You know, so I see again, like the evil or whatever out there opposed to be there so that we can go, no, we're not, and let's create better. But they've laid it all out like this. And I know it's kind of silly to think of genocide and things like this being that way, but perhaps. But whenever we were walking through this thing, we got to a stuck point and we couldn't figure a clue out. Mary quietly walked over to a lamp and turned it on. When she turned it on, the clue was written on the lampshade, but you wouldn't have known that unless she turned it on. And so I see us all sort of solving these little problems or these opportunities in disguise around this huge realm, and we're getting connected, and now we're getting to figure shit out. It takes sort of this evil out of it, you know?
Well, I mean, does evil exist? This is the problem. If you choose not to do bad things, which is basically what evil is, things we don't like, and they get very atrocious, then you should try to avoid getting stuck up in that mindset, because that too is influencing you. Truly, the mind precedes all. If you were born and you never had access to movies and all the modern things that actually do create our culture, not the way culture used to be created, how many deaths would you see in a lifetime? How many horrible, violent, imposed deaths would you see? Well, it's been very normalized for us. And not only has it been normalized, it's been normalized in a very perverse way, particularly like old 50s movie where a guy comes in, punches someone in the face, he's knocked out. Well, he's out of the picture now. Yeah. He got knocked out. Or they stab him with a knife. Oh, he's dead. Not even a close to true reflection on what violence actually is and how it plays out. And it's been used as a device in a storyline, but normalized. This has an effect on the way you think and how you feel about people. Is it possible that people don't really have violent tendencies boiled up to the surface to the degree that we think they do? One of the best ways that I'm aware of to kind of break free of the illusory nature of where we are vis-a-vis what's portrayed for us is to foster common sense. And quite often your common sense gets dismissed as ridiculous based on the things you've been told your whole life. But if you get back to that common sense, you'll find that you're often much closer to the mark than if you take the word of the textbooks and the school and all the things, the movies that have been put before you.
100%. I heard this guy talk about on a video that he reminded people to err on the side of, like, if you're going to assume something about someone, err on the side of ignorance and incompetence, not malice. And it was really interesting when he put that perspective out there, because he said, look, you don't know what people are going through. People are just living their lives. They're probably ignoring you altogether and have no clue what you're doing. They're not out to get you. And it took that sting out of sort of this malicious nature of this realm, because you could perceive it any way you want. But if you choose to just, as somebody cuts you off in traffic or something, think, yeah, you could choose to say that they did it to you on purpose. But more often than not, they were most likely putting makeup on while they're driving. They're on their phone. They're ignorant. They didn't check their blind spot. They're not looking right. They got a million things going through their mind. So it is interesting. And you're absolutely right. This perspective has changed everything for me, is being able to just say, things are definitely not what they are, but to take a lighthearted approach to the action rather than err on the side of defensiveness, because that made me shut down. You know what I mean? It made me just hate this place a little bit for a little while.
Well, what if this place is like school? This is for experiences and growth. And if that is true, what is school for? School is always a preparation for something to come. So while people are sitting here trying to control the school, that completely sets aside the purpose of what we're doing here. And it also camouflages that we're here for a very short period of time. If it is true that energy cannot be destroyed and that I was here before this life in some form, and I will be here after this life in some form, then this life is less than a drop in the bucket. And yet we have entities, or whatever is properly labeled, trying to control this, the school, the experience maker. And that is a very short-sighted view. When I start getting hung up or depressed, I bring that to mind. I'm here for a very short time compared to the amount of time I will be.
Dude, you're 100%. And do you feel then that, do you get moments of it, or do you feel it a big picture that the evil that's here, or the parasitic thing that's here challenging us in the specific way it is, that's made us grow so fucking much, if we're honest? It's been a tough teacher, but it's been a great, the results are inarguable, right? We may argue with the methods, but the results are inarguable. Do you feel that that's what's going on here? Do you think that this is a realm that could be better, but it was apprehended? You know, do you think that this is the shittiness is part of the level, if you will, of the school?
I think anyone who's looked diligently at the history that we've been denied, there were times that were amazing. Things were built that we can't comprehend. Consciousness had to be at levels that show we are not the apex right now. Fortune once said to me, this is a very fast and rough learning experience, and some people can't contend with it.
I don't disagree. Just to ask the question, do you think perhaps that the idea of a past civilization being here awesome is simply that, an idea, and that the realm is really more set up with things that have been left for us to figure out and be inspired by to create, rather than they were once and we're trying to get it back kind of thing?
If this place is anything like I suspect it is, then it's not somebody's plaything. And the things that happen are going to happen. Like, maybe it's true that every possibility will be worked out here. Maybe that's true. I don't know. But my point is, if we think about things like the Yuga cycle, which may be the oldest country in the world, maybe one of the oldest civilizations in the world, have written about extensively, they claim that there's golden ages that are beyond belief, where consciousness and love and high vibration reigns at a level that is unimaginable to us now. But in that, we're going to have dark ages. Well, if that exists, then it already provides for what we're experiencing now. And it also kind of implies that this is not some unusual thing that's never happened before.
I like how this is.
I mean, if there is a creator and this is a creation and spirituality matters, I would ask, do the ants ever take over the ant farm and turn it into something that is so abhorrent to the person who allowed for the ant farm to exist? Does that ever happen?
I wonder if that's sort of the thing that, and, you know, we get this, and I feel that that's a slip in programming, and I go there with you too, that really it's sort of our fault. Like, we fucked this place up and therefore need to be corrected and reset. But if we're honest with ourselves, you and I have no memory of that. And what are we learning if that's the case? We're not learning what not to do. We're just learning that the realm we're in sucks and the thing's a piece of shit with a metric we can't live up to and don't understand. And if that's the case, then that does not seem to be the realm that you and I favor. It seems more, and if you will, on this, that, yeah, we go through cycles, but perhaps let's just use a video game analogy. Each time you go through a game, they're more challenging, but you level up, you learn more, you use the skills of the past one to apply to the new one. You get a sword in that level that's important in this one, and you picked up keys you don't need that you need for this one. And I love the way that this Yuga cycle is depicted here, because it is more of a spiral than a sort of start over.
So if there is, or if there are ages, and let's consider the golden age. So we don't like when things get all dicey like it is now, but if it was a permanent golden age, how much would we actually learn?
Right.
If we just woke up every morning and everything was beautiful and everybody loved each other, really, that would be almost like a static existence. There'd be very little variation. So if this is true, we can assume that during a golden age, our consciousness, what we can know, our mind perceives all, is vastly expanded. And yet there's going to be a time when our consciousness is constrained significantly. The way they put this is, you lose, I think you have 1/4 or less of your consciousness and compassion by the time you get down to the dark age there, Kali. So if this is true, it almost seems like the system is built in to allow animosity and shortcoming and lower consciousness to prevail for some time. I would further point out, though, a man named Sri Yukteswar just defined relatively recently what the times, that some, most of the times portrayed are way too long, according to what Sri Yukteswar put forward. But getting back to the point, look, the Satya is the golden age. The Treta is just below that. Look how much of the wheel that occupies, while the darkest times only have about 1/3 down there. And they're much shorter than those other ages.
Yep.
So all this would be provided for if this reckoning has value. What we're experiencing would be provided for. I guess it doesn't necessarily make it all right that people do horrible things. But when you take a consciousness as an example and constrain it to a fourth or less of what it could be, what will be the result of that? Animalistic behavior.
Yep. And you're 100% in what would be the result of that. And the result is for a while, perhaps it continues until it doesn't. And until people stand up, if you will, in new ways and get creative about being in more harmony and more connection with one another. And that's the thing that the shit offers us. As we turn away from the media and from the education, from the medical, from all of it, it's just these massive, amazing communities are being built that are actually supportive and actually creating amazing things for wonderful people. And that is the sustainable next thing. But it took the Kelly to get us there, right? And I've said it before, you don't deserve me at my nirvana if you can't handle me at my samsara. And it seems
you don't know what you've got until it's gone, right? There's the Kali Yuga. How do you appreciate what you have? And until, you know, things like corporation have really been a bane for us, what it's allowed for very few to control damn near everything that makes modern life possible. But what's worse is I suspect that up in the golden age, they tried to leave things that would be here to try to help us because they knew the downward swing would once again roll around. Things built in stone. I once read an account of an Indian guru who said, we really have no written record in India of our history. And I thought, how can that be when one of the oldest languages is Sanskrit? And by the way, if you look at Sanskrit, what can be done with that language is almost mind-boggling. And so you begin to wonder, when Britain took that place over, were they scrubbing? They had total control. You know, how can it be that a place like that doesn't have a very valid written record? But then again, we understand that we're going to have low cycles. And in low cycles, bad things are going to happen.
Dude, I think that perhaps absolutely this happens. And if it happens like this, all these great understandings, writings, creations, all of that, the realm, they would know how this place works. So you would think that they would take some sort of amalgamation of this, put it in, excuse me, some sort of golden tablets, perhaps emerald tablets, maybe, and then bury them underground someplace crazy that would be then accessible later.
I think that almost for sure has happened, whether people who aren't so good have found it out and temporarily gained control. But all these things built in stone and the architecture and the temples, they lasted. We can see that. And now that we're waking up a little more, we can recognize that how we're the apex of tech. But what's going on now is that the powers that be are trying to replace the cycle that allows for the Kali Yuga with a digital reality. And the digital reality is a fallen reality in comparison to what we call nature or the natural world. And that's how they're attempting, in the same way the folks in the golden age tried to leave things that would help us in the fallen age, the people in control in the fallen age are working to prevent a golden age, at least for the majority of us.
Okay, let me ask you this. Do you think that the people, and you're not wrong here, but do you think that they're only doing that maybe consciously or unconsciously to enhance the next golden age? Like everything works together, sort of a thing. Like it's not literally
trying. I think the people in control right now are more slaved out than we are, to be honest with you.
And that's my question is, do they really think that they're doing what they're doing, but they need to be so convinced as actors, as their part, as their role in the realm, as staff of this place to create the conditions that then propel us into the next thing? Because it's not going to be handed to us, right? It's something that is a reaction or a response to our environment is what we create next. No, I don't feel any Jesus is going to come out of the sky and save us. I think we are the ones that built these things or usher in these things. But it's got to do with, you got to go through, again, the dark to know the light. But then the question is do those unconscious beings, are they doing that? And then did they get tapped on the shoulder at the golden age and go, guys, you nailed it. Way to go. All the rape and murder, you did great. You know, that's what we needed to then propel us into this other time.
I think it's a little more hardcore than that. The low vibrational powers that be don't see a golden age. They go a different way. And I think, or I suspect, that they have less choice than we do. I don't think it's a possibility for those particular players to wake up one morning and say, I've been doing it wrong. Now I'm going to go out and help everybody. I think they've made agreements or contracts in the way they operate that have locked them. And they traded their freedom, their humanity, or whatever you want to call it, for material. And that is a very low vibrational way to be. And that is a system that will not exist as the new eras roll forward in a higher vibrational reality. And I once read a book called, it's a two-volume book, Something of Egypt. I can't think of the name of it right now, but one of the ideas they put forward is the dark satellite. The idea that's portrayed in that is that people who continually monopolize a system and give nothing back to it are eventually subsumed by the natural reality, and their energy is applied back into the system in a way that it will help the system. In other words, I'm stealing daisies. Daisies are the most important thing here. I destroy daisies. I sell daisies. I eat daisies. But eventually, you become fertilizer for the daisies.
Damn. You know, and that kind of karmic action we can get behind, right? Because really then what we're doing in the dark ages is we're planting seeds at that time then. We're planting daisy seeds by letting the daisies run around and think that they own the shit. It's teaching us a ton. We're getting together and we're looking forward to things like this again.
Well, you've got to ask the question. Everything here is an agreement. We're starting to get to the point where agreement's being edged out, and that is the height of evil. Where you are just not given any choice. But so many of the systems that we opt into are bad choices that we agree to, like the birth certificate and, you know, the creation of a money-making device with our name on it that we think is us. But the point I would make is that how could we possibly have come here without agreeing to do so if it is so important, our free will? And by the way, I've been told by the highest spiritual people I've ever met that there are higher realms that don't have free will. And I thought, well, how can that be? And the way it was described to me is when you get to a certain level and you understand exactly how the natural world works and how the creator creates, you have no desire to do anything but operate within the realm of what is. And you don't need free will. That's how it was described to me. But getting back down to here where we do have free will, the gift of that free will is about like handing someone a key to decide their future. You can make decisions, and those decisions are going to make paths, and those paths are going to become your future. Getting back to the dark side, the low vibrational, they've made their choice. And if they continue on that, a tuning fork tells us the truth. If you go into a room of tuning forks, every one that is within its resonance will resonate. The ones that do not, they're just dead. They sit still. So as the resonance increases in the new era, the tuning forks that have chosen a lower vibrational path have a different reality than the tuning forks that resonate at the higher vibrational level. And that was done by their choices.
Because they can't resonate in that place. We're not, we don't need the rock guitar solo.
Not even artificially, right.
Exactly. We don't need the rock guitar solo in the symphony that we're playing later. You know, and that's just basically it, right? You just don't need, a banjo doesn't belong in the song we're playing. It's okay you play banjo. It's just, we're not, it doesn't, it's got no place here. You know what I mean?
Good point. So you can be Darth Vader, or you can be Luke Skywalker, and neither one of them is violating the rules.
It took
you're
right. And it took though the dichotomy, it took both of those dudes to realize Luke's power, the force opening up, and the dark side to be suppressed. But the dark side had to step up and challenge the force in a way to where it would step up and realize its true power. That's how I see the dark side here. Yes, we don't vibrate at the same frequency, but being bombarded by those frequencies, we are transformed into who we really are. And that is what is creating the harmonic resonance that's propelling us all forward and bringing the second sun in, or second sun's coming in and we're all realizing this. And that's what it feels like. And this is why, like, the evil things here, I agree with you. I agree with 0% of what you're saying. It just feels to me that they are also going to be offered sort of a clap at the end. The way I look at this again is like a play, right? You've got to have a villain and an actor, or a villain and a hero in a play, but both come out at the end and bow. It took both of them to create the experience in which created the catalyst, the emotions.
Right.
Yeah.
There is no light without dark. So the dark will exist, and it is not a violation. And just because there are beings that don't like the dark, that's the lesson here, isn't it?
Exactly.
What is the value of the golden rule? That's one of the highest values I can imagine. What is that value? Well, that is compassion.
Yep. Right. And you need to see it done so that you know that it's not what you want to participate in.
I see that person. They're not like me. I don't agree with what they do. I don't particularly like what they do, but I am obligated to treat them as I would like to be treated, up to a point.
100%. I'm adding Angkor Wat to our field trip here, bud.
I've always marveled. Dude. I think that may be the largest complex of all time. And it is mirroring the heavens, among other things. And we've been told a false narrative about that place as well.
Well, let's you and I go out there, get eyes on this. I'm already picturing it. You and me, arm in arm, we're skipping up to the front because we're so excited. It's a beautiful footage. Rose is filming it. It's adorable. And we go do this.
I've always been fascinated with I think they're mostly Buddhist monks that still have access, and they go to those ancient rooms that still exist, and they meditate within them in the mind sciences, which is another thing we temporarily lose in the dark ages. The mind sciences are beyond amazing, and what has been proved in them has been endlessly defamed by our Western spiritual traditions and denied, when in fact Christianity had the mind sciences, which is evidenced by the monk with the vow of silence, or the monk in his cell for 20 years. What were they doing in there? They were doing the mind sciences, what I call the mind sciences, which is almost always accessed through meditation of one form or another.
And even this, as I see them here, there looks like they're just walking. We have a labyrinth out back that I've mowed in an acre that we have, and it's about 1500 steps in, 1500 steps total in and out. It's one way in, one way out. And this walking meditation is what I do. And so it's really interesting that these dudes are just strolling here. Crow, let's go do this.
Dude. Yeah, if they're novice monks, you know, that was a description I read years ago when I was getting interested in meditation and the spiritual traditions that still have the mind sciences. And they pointed out that an untrained mind, or the vast majority of us, is like boiling water. And when you begin to meditate and take control of your mind, it's not boiling water, it becomes calm. Another simile they use is a crazed monkey in a tree, is how most of our minds. But then I went on to read a thing that kind of blew me away, where it claimed every time you take a breath, your train of thought changes. And I thought, how can that be? And then I learned that it was true. I take a breath, I'm thinking about hot dogs. I take a breath, I'm thinking about trains. I take a breath. It's that crazy. Right. And that led me to the all important in my path. Why is there a song playing in my head that I can't turn off? I haven't heard that song for as long as I can remember, and I cannot turn it off. And that is when I set about trying to turn it off. And I got very downhearted, because at first I couldn't. And when I thought I did, as soon as I quit paying attention, it'd come right back. And quite often I woke up in the morning with the song playing in my head, because music when I was young was such an important part of what I accepted as my culture. Eventually, I worked out little tactics, and then eventually I could turn the music off at will instantly. And I began to recognize the truth of what the mind sciences had taught the youngest of us back in the day. And what would a culture be where the young were introduced to controlling their minds at such an early, early age? But the novice monk, in many traditions, one of the first things that they do is what you said. They're walking through the day, counting their breaths. Well, why are they doing it? because they're taking control of their thought process to focus it on counting their breath and learning how important that breath is. These are things we are never shown or hinted to in the Western world that I was educated and grew up in. And I imagine as we get into the new eras, many versions of what I've just described will begin to reintroduce. Maybe they won't even look anything like the older versions, but at the end of the day, our minds precede our reality. And the truth is that the average mind that has never tried to take control of itself is seemingly under the control of the other, whatever that is. And it ain't you, and it ain't me.
God, you're awesome. Yeah, I picture the song in your head being Hold On Loosely by 38 Special.
I would not be surprised if I woke up with that very song in my head once upon a time.
It's a jam, dude. It's got a killer hook, the guitar. Fascinating, dude.
I was a roadie for years, and I once did a show with all the Southern bands, and I remember 38 Skinner? Special.
Really?
But the Outlaws was the really impressive one. Three semi-old dudes at the time. It was the early 90s, and they just brought it, three of them.
Badass, man. Okay. Are you a musician? Do you jam?
I play guitar. I haven't much in my recent life, but dude, I was a roadie for almost a decade.
I'll give you a piece for me. I woke up with some nonsense for a long time. When I started playing guitar, my life got better after I picked it back up. It's like there was a dude in me that was upset I was not playing music. And now I'm playing every day, dude. And I'm writing music again. So if I may plant another seed in your garden there, dude, jam. And then you and I will go on tour to Prague and go see this thing ourselves.
Jason is actively wanting to be in a band. So you're a phone call away. Music is critically important. Yes. And that is why we got the music that corrupted my generation. And then they fed it steroids times 1,000 and they brought us rap. That is vibration lowering, mind destroying through music. When in fact, music can be one of the most lofty tools that we engage with. If it exists, it vibrates. And that is another truth that has been shuffled away from our view with modern scientism.
Could not agree more. And again, for the audience out there, there is a big difference between rap and hip hop. There's some amazing hip hop artists actually that's flow treatment, their use of the language and beat and guys like Black Delicious, things like that. That's okay. On a road trip,
I can't do it. At some point, I had to recognize the truth about the music that I grew up loving. And when I got honest with myself and I started going back and like classical at first, how can I ever listen to this? There's no hook. There's no repetitive beat. There's no chorus that comes and says the same words over and over repetitively. And then a breakthrough happened where I started listening to the classical and trying to identify each instrument. And then my mind exploded because I recognized by study how many instruments were in an orchestra back in the day, how many different sections, the woodwind, the brass, and then the complexity of it was discovered by me. And once I saw that complexity, and the beauty and intricacy and the amount of training required to play at that level, and I came back to what I thought was great music, it was infantile. It was lowering. And not to completely defame it, I'm not trying to say I hate all the music I grew up with, but unfortunately it was used as a tool to subjugate us all. And by the time rap came around, it was more damaging than anything I can imagine. And while I would love to say, well, all these bands that I grew up with, except this one, it's just not true, because the music industry did what it did. So if it was on the radio, it was in their freeway that they controlled with a toll gate. And that's a fact. And what we lost in my generation, basically based on music, was the family unit, what love actually is, and sex, and what sex is for, and the normalization of drugs, which we are still reaping that whirlwind as we speak. The pusher no longer really on the street corner as much as it is at CVS, normalized to a level where the damage has been incalculable. And music was a foundational tool in doing this. And it would have been far different had just random musicians made rock and roll or whatever genre of music free of the machine that was controlling publishing and putting the social engineering in.
I don't disagree.
Frequencies like the 808 kick drum.
Yep.
That is a root chakra vibration that holds you low at your lowest chakra and surrounded by red in the sacral low vibrational tones of abrogation, sex, and animalistic tendency. Not totally. That I'm saying my music was any better, because it's a seed in the same garden.
That's the thing, though. And I'm going to say that things like bands like Tool, Pink Floyd, Pussifer, Perfect Circle, right? Things like this, I feel, are modern day alchemists who needed, yeah, to get their songs on the radio, and they had to play a game to get them there. But there is a ton of information, just like the ancient texts and alchemical drawings and things like this, where there is encoded wisdom in there, and for the ears to hear it. And it's really, really interesting. And I don't disagree with you. The standard tuning to 440, you know, like I was telling you before we got on here, I got a tuning fork at 432, because that's what I plan to play with, this some new frequencies on the music, so that the music I'm playing is not in a disharmonious tone, that we're going to start from a different foundation, right, and set it apart just there. It's a different world out here. It's amazing. And I don't disagree with you that was meant to subjugate. You look at the Laurel Canyon incidences and all
proof
of that.
In the pudding.
Dude.
You know, the Beatles are still held up as number one. Well, I got news for you. They were a Tavistock construct. And even if I talk with Jason about this, he loves music. So I don't fault him. I love music more than that at one point. It was literally what I woke up in the morning for. I wanted to be the rock star. I wanted to be in all these. But the truth, if you want to come around to it, is that was financed and put together by a Tavistock or Tavistock-like organization to do damage. And it did. It worked a dream. And now, could have human beings gotten together free of that construct and tried to make music that was beautiful and uplifting? All you got to do is go back to the 70s. You know, even the music had made it into Coca-Cola commercials. Do I need to tell you what Coca-Cola is about? And what was it? I'd like to teach the world to sing in perfect harmony. Everybody remembers it, but we are so far from that now that if that kind of music came out, it would be viewed as cheesy, snarky, and just ridiculous at a level that there is no room and airplay for such ridiculous music. But if you go back and back and back, slowly there is a little more joy in a lot of the musical genres that are like mainstream. But the point is the British Invasion, it was exactly that. By the way, there were two of them. It happened again in 1980 with MTV. How is it that we live in America with Hollywood and 80% of all music TV videos were out of England? How? Why? The first Van Halen video looks like a caveman shooting with a potato cam. Go look at the first Van Halen MTV video and you will laugh your butt off. How? They were in LA, where Hollywood exists. How is that the best that could have been done? I think they're even dressed up as cavemen in that old video. I think it's the first Van Halen MTV video, if I'm not mistaken. I might be, but I'm not sure. But all these British Invasion bands were financed and put forward and made to be what they were by the Tavistock-like social engineers.
Nastiness here.
I think that's
taking
it.
All the
yeah,
clothes
that,
off
that's
of,
it. Yeah.
How silly. I'm going to mute the audio. We're going to sit through this ad here.
It is ridiculous at a level. I think 8 out of 10 of the early ones were Rod Stewart. I mean, look at that. We're in LA. Yeah, we're in LA. Hollywood is here. What's going on here? Guy with a handy cam doing a Van Halen video?
Yeah, it's real. It's weird. It's like Midsummer's Night meets Blair Witch. And so they're just stripping this.
Trying to catch up to the social engineers who were already prepared in Europe for the launch of MTV, I would estimate.
Look, two little dudes in red, root chakra, tugging her clothes off.
Will that
his
fly,
clothes off?
Will this scene fly in today's world?
Fuck no. Fuck no. They got to put it on as relic.
The song is Pretty Woman, by the way. So
yeah. And it's got a dude tied up being clothes ripped off at the very beginning.
Well, everyone's going to be maltreating that woman in this video.
He's got a Clockwork Orange thing going with him. Mind Control. Remember that movie?
There it is. Like, he's held the programming. His eyes open. See him looking into the camera, adjusting the programming.
Yep. The filter to make sure you could see it clear. Interesting. He's got like a hunchback of Clockwork Orange going on. Jester pants. A lot of symbolism. How weird, man. Well, before you and I just sit here and watch this Van Halen video, I tell you what, let's take a little break here and get to our afterthought. I'm going to remind everybody that located down in the show description of all the ways to find this amazing man and his work, go check out Crow777radio.com and go check out all of his stuff, guys. He's got Shoot the Moon, everything. And your new work.
I just put up the 16th member solar video, or I'm getting ready to in the next couple days.
Boom. Guys, there you go. Go check it out. It's one of the best investments you can make. And this man can be found there. That's where his work can be found. And I love that it's all in one place. You're a motivator to all of us to say, guys, just come find me here. And thank you for the light that you anchor for all of us content creators and the like. Cheers. My friend, before we get into the afterthought here, what gets you out of bed every single morning, keeps you moving forward, Bubba?
Right now, if it's like a hobby type thing, it's my solar filming with my solar telescope that I saved up for so long, and the excitement of the new era, the front row seat to the new era, which is birthing things that we can't even imagine probably, and the idea that our sun may have a binary that is co-equal to what's going on, and the rise in consciousness, which I think is self-evident. I always use the bulldog as the example. It's not just us. In the 1970s, if a bulldog grabbed a skateboard and jumped into a pool and rode it, that would be the most famous dog in the universe. And yet, you can find them dime a dozen. Dogs ride skateboards as they're intended now. That, decades ago, would have been an amazing thing to everybody. We're all getting a consciousness boost. We're all waking up.
Messages.
Hey Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.